get ready.
Man, I don't ever want to be so woke that me and the KKK are out here agreeing on the same shit. Before they were killing people to keep us from voting, now we talk ourselves out of the shit.
For real talk.
Before you get out here live wrong talking about minimum wages and starter jobs, educate yourself on why the minimum wage was created in the first damn place.
All the time.
You shouldn't be the same person you was 10 years ago. You should be growing towards a better you every day. And the only ones who will be threatened by that are the ones who refuse to grow and are scared their ass gonna get left behind.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Say, man, I don't give a fuck about the feds, DEA, ATF, Task Force, Jump Out Boys, or your local neighborhood robbers, baby. I got to keep on pushing.
In the source in the snow. They call me Mr. Kilogram in case your ass ain't no. I'm the boss baller of blow when you come to the gulf. Other cats holding some weight, but they ain't holding enough. I've been around way before the interstate was on fire. Before they hit it in the gas tank or the tire. Before a motherfucker even knew about a stash spot. We just put work in the back of the car and mashed out. Now ask a nigga that was doing it in 9-3. On the interstate in the rental car, you can find me. Suitcase of stuff like a holiday turkey. Chopper right beside him in case a nigga try to jerk, man. I did the city thing, plus I played it out of state. Either way, a nigga was known for having a lot of weight. Try to knock me down, but it only made me bigger. Haters wanna see me fall, but a nigga gotta keep on pushing.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span. This is episode number 249 of the Reporter. Right now, we're rocking out to some Bun B, pushing off that Trill album. Rock out with your boy.
I feel you, young. I mean, feel you. I'm on the corner from sun up to sundown. Competition getting hectic. I'm headed for out of town. What I was selling for 20, niggas selling for 10. So I'm about to take it to drastic measurements for my ends. My partner Robert 17 and in the bins. And me, I'm in the bucket, but fuck it, that's how it is. Shit, I got an ounce about to cut it in the stone. Stick stop, port off of Texas, I work it in the loans. I'm a little nigga on this hustle about to rise. I was cutting 17 and I was only paying 5. A week went by and a nigga took that drive back to H-Town with 3 up about to score me 9. A Pyrex bowl in the whoop so cold. I cook for 9, then I stretch it for 9 more. Whoa, I'm that nigga baking with holes in his dough. Crumbing nigga selling them ether, but fucking shit sold.
Hey, no matter how hard it get, you know I'm a real dude.
Yes, indeed, y'all. Yes, indeed. Your man's fan back on the motherfucking mic, man. It's been a minute. Been damn near a month since the last time we did this thing here. But, yo, it's the month of June, man. My birthday month and all that, man. It's Pride Month and everything going on this month. Turn this shit down. But, yeah, man. We are back to the... Let me turn this off, as a matter of fact. Shit, I don't even like that verse. But, but yeah, man. This is episode 249, man. It's been a minute. It's been a nice long minute, and I got the emails, I got the private messages, I got the tweets. Yo, Span, my feed is dry, bruh. Where you at? We're going to talk a little bit about all of that. All of that, man, because I got a lot to talk to y'all about. Got to talk to y'all, my listeners. I got to talk to y'all about some things. But, of course, before we do all of that, we got to let you guys know how to get in touch with us over here at the Span Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. Go ahead and hit up that hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages, and of course, we will play them on the show, and we will respond in kind. And if you're watching the show live while we do this here on Facebook, you can chop it up with us while we're doing the show, man. go ahead and hit up that hotline, call in and be like, yo, man, Span, I got something to say about this shit you talking about. So you can go ahead and hit up that hotline, area code 313-288-0485. You can also hit us up on the email here at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave me those emails. And, of course, those emails will get read here live on the show. And, of course, I will reply to whatever it is you said to me in that email right here on the show, man. It's your way of getting in, getting your voice heard. Another way to do that. So go ahead and hit up that email at feedback@thespanreport.com. You can also follow your boy on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. So go ahead and follow me there. Chop it up with your man Span throughout the week. Also, man, you can go ahead and leave us a review on iTunes and or Stitcher Radio. 5-star reviews, preferably. Those are the ones that get read here on the show. You get your shout outs. And we appreciate everybody who leaves those 5 stars, man. If you leave less than 5 stars, probably not going to read your shit. Just gonna be honest with you, probably not gonna read your shit, but yeah, the 5-star reviews, man, y'all are the ones who get the shout outs, man. Y'all get the kudos and the appreciations over here at the Span Report Podcast Network, man. So leave us those 5-star reviews on iTunes and or Stitcher Radio. And also, you can go to www.thespanreport.com. Everything is available there. You can vote in the polls over there. You can leave comments on the website over there. You can watch replays of the show right there on thespanreport.com. You can also go to our store at T Public and buy yourself some merch. Get yourself a t-shirt, get yourself a coffee mug, get yourself a water bottle. You know what I'm saying? It's cold. I mean, well, not it's cold. It's hot out now. It's hot outside now. You know what I'm saying? That little summer breeze coming through. You know what? Like, I'm seeing my people down south really talk about how hot it is. You know how you can cool yourself off? With the Span Report Podcast Network coffee. Damn, I'm fucking it up. Water bottle, man. Go ahead and get yourself that water bottle, man. Keep yourself real cool. Or you can get yourself a wife beater. Now, we are not endorsing domestic violence. But you can get yourself some Span Report Podcast Network wife beaters, man. We got those too. It's crazy what we got in that store, man. So go ahead and get yourself some merch, man. We really do appreciate everybody who goes about the business of doing that. Also, while we're talking about supporting the show, man. While we're talking about supporting the show. So check this out, man. I've been dealing with some shit. I've been really dealing with some shit. And it's part of the reason why I haven't really been doing the show like the past month. It's been a lot. It's been a lot, man. Like, as you guys know, me and my wife, we actually talked about the fact that your man Span had been, banned on Facebook a couple times, right? Like, within the course of 30 days, I had been banned on Facebook. And so I had to deal with that. And I tied the show and the network so much to Facebook to where, like, me being banned kind of put the show on, like, the back burner. Or I couldn't really do it because of how we had tied the live show and everything to Facebook. So one of the things that I was really thinking about doing was maybe moving the show back off of Facebook, back on the Crowdcast, whom we had been with for quite a while. We had been with Crowdcast for a long time, and I know of other podcasters who use that medium to do their live shows, and I actually did like Crowdcast. There was nothing really wrong with Crowdcast, but I was feeling as though, like, yo, man, I know a lot of people on Facebook that don't really want to go to a whole other website to kind of watch the show or whatnot. And somebody reached out to me, man. Somebody I really do have a lot of respect for in this game. One of my podcast heroes reached out to me and said, hey, man, look, they going to come where you at. You know what I'm saying? They going to come where you at. They fuck, if they rocking with you, like they say that they rocking with you, they will come where you are and they will support you where you are. Right. And so, I felt that, man, because I watched that grind, you know, I watched their grind over the years, man, and I've seen the hard work that they put into their show and what that has done for them. And yeah, yo, they are supported quite a bit. And so to have that person reach out to me when they really didn't have to, man, they didn't have to do it at all, but they did, and they let me know that they're looking for this show to continue to go. And so one of the things they also told me was that I should lean more on my listeners for support of the Span Report Podcast Network. Now, as you guys know, man, your man Span works a full-time job, right? I'm a full-time worker. Sometimes I'm doing 60 hours a week at the job. And unfortunately, the podcast suffers because of that, right? So I'm not able to do not just the Span Report Podcast, but then there's the Baywatch Podcast that I do with my wife. And then there's the Beer and Chicken Joint that I've been doing with Cliff and Walt. some of those things just kind of, you know, go to the wayside because work takes precedent over all of these things. Like the podcast is pretty much like it's a hobby. You know, it's something that I really do love doing. But yo, if you in the grand scheme of things, it's a hobby. But it's, you know, I love this shit, right? I love this shit. And so I'm just saying that the job kind of takes away from my ability to kind of pay attention as much as I would like to like, you know, some of the things that are happening in the social media, some of the things that are happening in the news, because one of the things about being on this microphone and sharing my opinion with you guys about the news, about what's going on in the world, is that I kind of like to want to know what the fuck it is I'm talking about before I get on this mic. And, you know, being at the job in the ways that I have been lately, it's been very hard for me to do that, like to pay attention as much to these things that are going on in the world and having a command of those topics. So that has been contributing to the reason why we haven't had any shows as of late. But going back into the whole thing about the live shows, right? Because like I said, I've been tying the show into Facebook, right? What I want to do, and this is something that, you know, I've never really leaned on my audience. I never really leaned on you guys to like donate to the show or give money. I mean, I mention it every show, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, you could donate to the show as much as you like, as often as you like. And, you know, we appreciate every dime over here at the Spare Poor Podcast. And it becomes a thing where like, yeah, you hear it and you're not really paying attention to it. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh yeah, he going through the spiel, but yo, we really do need that. Real talk. We really do need that. If we're going to move the show off of Facebook and not have to be, you know, shut down by Facebook allowing racists to call me a nigga and then, you know, ban me for pointing it out, I need y'all's help, man. I do. So as far as like the live shows, I want to go back to Crowdcast. However, the Crowdcast services cost a little bit more than your man Span can really afford right now. Now I feel kind of funny even saying that shit, because for the longest time, man, I've been footing this shit out of my own pocket, and it feels weird to even say that, but I need y'all. If we're gonna continue to do this on like the live, you know, live show and everything else, I need y'all, man. And so what I'm trying to do is I've got a Patreon set up, and you guys will have that information on the spanreport.com. I've got a Patreon account set up so that if you give a dollar, if I can get like 50 people to give a dollar a month, we can keep this shit rolling on, you know, as far as the live shows are concerned. I got well more than 50 listeners. Come on now. I know it's more than 50 of you people out here listening to your man Span, man. I got well more than 50 listeners. I see the downloads. I see them numbers. If I can give all of y'all, well, not just all of y'all, but if 50 of y'all decided, you know what, I'm gonna contribute to the man, to the cause, man, a dollar to help this, you know, to help this go, you know, keep rolling, I appreciate it. I really would, man. This is weird for your man Span. I ain't even gonna lie to you. I'm a person that really does not like asking for help. I don't like asking for it. If I can't get it done myself, sometimes I just feel like the shit ain't gonna get done if I can't do it. So this is me being vulnerable with y'all, man. I need y'all's help. I really do. If we're going to keep this ball rolling the way we want it to go, I need y'all's help, man. Yeah, that's real. that is so for real. But also, man, like I said, outside of the Facebook shit and, you know, work issues, man, yeah, man. Yeah, man, I don't know. I've been feeling like not myself. You know, I haven't really been feeling myself. And it's been like, I've been in like this little funky-ass mood. And for a long time, I didn't know if it was just like, if it was like, you know, like around May, like around Mother's Day and stuff. I always kind of get a little moody around that time, man, because I'm always just like feeling like it's unfair that my mom ain't here. But yo, man, I've been like outside of that, just like I think I'm frustrated with work. I'm frustrated with I feel like that's something that I don't want to fucking do anymore, but I can't just walk away from it. You know what I'm saying? Like I don't want to do that shit no more. But it's people depending on me, so I got to do it. You know, there's things that I want to do, and that shit provides a lot. You know what I'm saying? Like, it provides in a way, but it's like that what is that? The necessary evil. Like, you got to do this shit. You like this, the things you've been able to do, that place has been able to, kind of help you do those things. So that's the, you know, I've been driving, I got a new truck like 2 months ago, and I've been driving that truck way more than I plan to. And a lot of it is just me trying to remind myself as like, yo, this is why you come to work every day, because you get to have nice things like this. But I really don't like what the fuck it is I'm doing anymore. I can't stand going to work. So I've been feeling like I've been in a funk, man. I've been in a funk. It ain't been good. And yeah, that's enough of that shit. This shit is depressing already. And we ain't even got to the motherfucking show, man. So before I get on this motherfucking mic and start crying, I'm gonna just go ahead and like get into the news. All right. Now, our first story in the news comes out of CNN.com. And so check it. As I've been talking about work as in this intro and everything else about how I've just been feeling like I don't want to do that shit anymore and everything. Come to find out, burnout is an official medical diagnosis. And the World Health Organization says, yeah, that shit's real, man. So let me go ahead and. Yeah, let's. Oh, that shit is low. But anyway, we're going to read this story here out of CNN.com. It says, it's a feeling of extreme work stress that's long been embedded in the cultural lexicon, and now it might be codified in your medical records as well. Burnout is now a legitimate medical diagnosis according to the International Classification of Diseases, the World Health Organization's handbook that guides medical providers in diagnosing diseases. Burnout now appears in the ICD's 11th section on problems related to employment or unemployment. According to the handbook, doctors can diagnose someone with burnout if they meet the following symptoms. Feeling of energy depletion or exhaustion. Your man Span be tired, yo. I come home from work sometimes, man. What I do, this is my routine. I come home from work and like I go take a shower and I sit on the couch and I like watch some news. I watch a little Jeopardy, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, you got to have the little trivial pursuit going on and whatnot. I watch a little Jeopardy, you know what I'm saying? Try to catch up on some news and whatnot. I'm in my phone a little bit, you know. And then, like, before I know it, I done passed out on the couch. Like, knocked out. And then my wife is just like, yo, nigga, why don't you just go to bed? And I'm like, nah, I don't want to go to bed. I don't want to go to bed. She's like, nigga, you need to just go to bed. And I'm like, nah, I don't want to go to bed. And I should be in the bed. But, like, yeah, man, I be passed out, man. I'm exhausted. I'm always exhausted. So that's one thing. I got that. The other thing, it says increased mental distance from one's job or feeling of negativism or cynicism related to one's job. Man, I tell y'all, today I was so close. I was so close to saying, fuck this shit, I'm out. With some of this shit that was going on at the job today, nigga. Like, I was just like, I came home. I was going to do overtime today. I said, fuck this shit. I'm going home. Fuck this job. That's how I felt. So, yeah, I got number two, too. Also, it says reduced professional efficacy. See, here's another thing, too. I'm very, I take pride in my work. You know what I'm saying? Like, I take pride in my work. And I've been starting to feel like, man, why am I putting so much effort into this shit? You know what I'm saying? Because it don't really matter in the grand scheme of things. I've been having those sorts of feelings, especially considering some of the managerial relationships with what we do and some of the ways in which customers are able to kind of, it's a whole shit. I ain't about to get into everything, but yeah, man, your man Spam got that reduced professional efficacy when it comes to the job too. Also, it says before making the call, the document says the doctor should first rule out adjustment disorder as well as anxiety and mood disorders, and the diagnosis is limited to work environments and shouldn't be applied to other life situations. Researchers have been studying burnout for decades. Burnout has been a blurry cultural concept that has defied attempts to create a specific consensus definition scientists can all agree on. Psychologist Herbert Freidenberger is credited with inaugurating the formal study of the state of burnout with a scientific article published in 1974, according to a 2017 review of literature published in the journal Sage Open. The authors of that review, Linda and Torsten Heinemann, say that over the next four decades, hundreds of studies appeared on the subject. During that time, they noted burnout was not considered an actual mental disorder, even though it is one of the most widely discussed mental health problems in today's society. So, yeah, man, I mean, I can be over here on my whole, you know, self-diagnosis shit, but truth be told, that I feel this way. I feel like, especially when it comes to the job, I mean, when it comes to that, I feel burnt out. I feel like, you know, like I told y'all, I feel like that's some shit I just don't want to do anymore. That's just how bad it's gotten. And maybe I just need a break from it. You know what I'm saying? Maybe I do need an extended vacay. But that extended vacay also hurts my pockets. So I can't really take that extended vacay. You know what I'm saying? It's like that Rock and Hard Place shit. That's how it is for you, man, Span. But yes, yes. Burnout is an actual diagnosis that you can be diagnosed with medically, but it has to be separated from your other life events. It has to be specific to what's going on at your job. So go see your doctors, man. You might, you know, as I should too. I got a physical that should be coming up pretty soon. But yeah, man, burnout, it's a real thing. Real talk. Another story that we got coming out of, as a matter of fact, this comes from Poughkeepsie Journal, the Poughkeepsiejournal.com. And this is in relation to the When They See Us docuseries that was that premiered this past weekend on Netflix. A couple things I kind of wanted to say about the Netflix docuseries When They See It. I've been seeing quite a few folks, I've been seeing quite a few folks who are dealing with issues where they don't know whether or not they want to watch it, right? They don't know whether or not they want to watch it or whether or not they can watch it. I've seen people say that they watched the first 15 to 20 minutes and they couldn't get through it. I finished it in one sitting. I was able to like kind of sit down and watch it. I've been familiar with the story. I wanted to see it, but I'll tell you this, parts one and four were the hardest ones for me to watch. Now, what I will say also, for those of you who feel like you cannot watch this, I will tell you that you don't have to. You know what I'm saying? I know there will be some people who will say that, you know, it's your duty to watch it. Just put the Netflix on stream so Ava can get the streams, get the money and everything else. But, you know, like, I get that there's a thing where people are just like, yo, I can't put myself through that. And there's no shame in that, right? For your own mental health, right? The only thing I will say is that for those who will say that these stories or these sorts of movies, like we saw the same thing when it came to like the slavery movies, like 12 Years a Slave and Django and it was another story. It was another movie that came out. I'm drawing a blank on it right now, but there was another like these movies tend to have a lot of people in our community upset. And they're upset in the sense, and I guess they're upset in the sense that they don't feel like there's balance, right? That there's not enough balance. Like, we don't have the good stories. We don't see enough of the good stories, man. They always telling us we were slaves or we being beaten down and we're downtrodden and everything else. However, what I will say is this, is that these stories need to be told, and that because these stories are told, sometimes people who were not necessarily familiar with these stories are now made familiar, and then then actions can be made, right? And one of the things I think about is the R. Kelly docuseries that we saw earlier this year with Lifetime, Surviving R. Kelly. And after folks watched that, there were so many people who were not aware of the allegations against R. Kelly, of the severity of the allegations against R. Kelly, of the numerous amounts of women who were alleged victims of R. Kelly. After that series aired, then you started seeing traction in the legal system to rectify or to address what R. Kelly had been accused of doing, right? And so in many ways, these stories being told can kind of lead to some correction, some social correction as far as like, okay, so this happened and this was the end result. It wasn't necessarily sufficient, or the system dropped the ball in this particular instance, but this person has been able to kind of operate with impunity since then, right? And something very similar is happening with When They See Us. So I'm going to read this story. And like I said, let me pull this back up. This comes out of the PoughkeepsieJournal.com. And we're going to read this. It says, the case of the so-called Central Park Five is coming to Netflix this month. A four-part series directed by Ava DuVernay premieres May 31st. It says that Vassar College is reviewing the status of a board of trustee member amid student outcry stemming from the member's involvement in the infamous Central Park Five case 30 years ago. That's according to Elizabeth Bradley, college president, in a letter to students, alumni, and community. Linda Fairstein, one of Vassar's 34 Board of Trustees members, was the prosecutor in the case involving five African-American and Latino teenagers arrested in 1989 in connection with the rape of jogger Trisha Miele. They were convicted for multiple charges, including assault, attempted murder, and rape. All five were exonerated in 2002 when serial rapist Matias Reyes confessed that he was Miele's sole attacker. When They See Us, a four-part series released by Netflix Friday, directed by Ava DuVernay, dramatizes the events before and after the headline-making trial, showing how detectives and prosecutors manipulated and coerced the innocent young men, Antron McQuay, Kevin Richardson, Yusef Salam, Raymond Santana, and Corey Wise. Fairstein is an honors graduate from Vassar in 1969 and served in the office of the New York County District Attorney's Office from 72 until 2002, according to Vassar's website. Mary Robles, an international studies junior at Vassar, published a petition Sunday morning calling for Fairstein's removal. As of Monday morning, more than 2,000 people had signed a petition on change.org. The boys were wrongfully helped in prison. Wait, the boys she wrongfully helped in prison are our neighbors, brothers, and sons, Robles said in the petition's description. They are now men that have been robbed of a life. I am writing this petition because I was so emboldened by Vassar to do so. Bradley, in a letter on Sunday, said, "We take such concerns from students and alumni very seriously and understand the significant issues involved here. I was personally contacted by the chair of the board to request that the executive committee review these concerns. He has agreed and will promptly bring it to the board's executive committee." As a first-generation low-income student who relies on financial aid, Robles said she was originally scared to publish it. "This is so much greater than that," Robles said, "but this isn't just a Vassar problem. It's a problem across institutions in this country. I'm just doing my small part to address accountability and diversity as my Vassar education these past 2 years has taught me to do." Now, one of the things I think is very interesting, and how you doing, Denise? And hey, Tanisha. One of the things that I think is very interesting about this Vassar thing is that she wasn't a Vassar trustee on the board of trustees in 1989. And I'm not exactly sure when Linda Fairstein became a member of the board of trustees at that particular institution. However, I'm sure that they could not have been completely ignorant to her role in that particular case. And it takes shining a light on these particular instances in order for sometimes a level of justice to be served. And I go back to the surviving R. Kelly docuseries on Lifetime, where now we're looking at R. Kelly looking at 11 more charges stemming from abuse of young women and girls. I think they were like 16 years old at the time. And as a matter of fact, I think it happened right here in Detroit. I'm not sure the details of that. I haven't read it, but I did see that he had been charged with 11 more. He had 11 more charges against him. So yeah, like these sorts of series kind of sheds a light on something. And then society kind of tries to do a course correction. Right. And then you think about like the board of trustees also don't want them problems. Right. You got the students pissed off. You got people who may have been on the board of trustees who may not have been aware that, yo, she was the prosecutor. She was the one who did that shit. You know what I'm saying? So this series coming out is it highlights that. Also, people have, you know, found out, like, yo, she sells books. She was a very successful author. She was selling crime novels and shit. And she been out here, like, living her best life for motherfucking 30 years off the bat as these men, these now men who were then kids, were suffering and toiling under the false allegations of having raped that woman in that park. So, I mean, I don't know anybody who's necessarily feeling sorry for Linda Fairstein at this particular point, but for those of you who feel like you can't watch this, I understand, right? Because again, it is a lot. It is a lot. Don't let anybody shame you into saying, well, you got to watch this. You ain't, you know, you not for the culture if you don't watch this. Hey man, I get it. It's a lot. I sat there. I watched it. I watched part four. Tears were streaming down my face on part four. That shit was heavy, man. I got hit in the gut a couple times watching that damn series. It is powerful. You know what I'm saying? But I also can understand that everybody can't sit and watch those things. And that is perfectly okay. I guess, like, the only pushback that I have to any of it is that, like, when people say they don't want these sorts of things made, that's the only pushback I have to it, because it's very important that these stories are told. And one of the reasons why it's important for these stories to be told, so for those people who may have been involved, who have yet to be held accountable for their actions, may in some way meet some sort of consequence. And Linda Fairstein now is meeting some sort of consequence, because now there are people calling for boycotts of her books. The students at her college are calling for her to be removed as a board of trustee at that school. She's been, like, pretty much persona non grata on social media. She's been put into a bubble, you know what I'm saying? But the bubble is one of her own making because of the actions in which she exhibited during that particular time. And Tanisha is in the chat room, and Tanisha is saying, like, it was extremely difficult to watch. Yes, it was. Like I said, I watched the whole thing in one sitting. The first parts were extremely hard to watch. And watching Corey Wise's ordeal while he served the longest time out of all five of them, and watching how he had to deal with his incarceration was tough to watch, was tough to take in. And yeah, man, like, but as we see, the airing of this docuseries is reaping some real world results in the fact that some of the people, or at least one of the people that we know of who was involved in that, may actually be dealing with some real consequences as it stands right now. So, yeah, man, that's what's in the news. Another thing that's in the news, and this is actually some good news, man. We got to talk about some good news. So one of the things that I saw that is actually coming out of, is it New York or was it Illinois? It's one of these two. I got two weed stories up here, man, and both of them good stories. So hold on, y'all. Let me make sure. Here we go. So check this out. All right. So in New York City, they can no longer test for weed when they are hiring you for a job, or if your ass is on probation. Yeah, man. So we're going to read this story here. This actually comes out of Power 105.1. Dig that. It says the New York City Council announced that they just passed bills prohibiting marijuana testing being required as part of the hiring process in New York City and banning the city from requiring marijuana testing for people on probation. The bill will close one trapdoor that trips people up, said the council's public safety committee chair, Donovan Richards. Too many people come out. They are trying to do better and they get busted for marijuana and go back into jail or prison. This sets them back. The city conducts hundreds of tests each year. All right. And then there's like a couple tweets here. It says breaking: the New York City Council just passed bills prohibiting marijuana testing being required as part of the hiring process. Now, as I'm reading this, it sounds as though this may be for positions available within for the city, maybe not necessarily for private companies. But yeah, man, like in say for instance, here in Michigan, where we've legalized marijuana for not just medicinal use, but also for recreational use, there are still companies that will not hire you if you are found to have THC positive in your bloodstream. My particular employer is one of them. If you try to get a job with one of the big three, whether that be Ford, whether that be General Motors, whether that be Fiat Chrysler, you still have to pass a drug test, and they are still screening for marijuana testing on those drug tests. And if you don't pass it, you ain't getting hired. So yeah, it kind of tampers down the enthusiasm for the legalization of the drug. I kind of feel like until there is, wait a second, what the hell happened here? But until there is a change at the federal level where marijuana is moved off of the schedule or is moved off of the banned substances list on the federal level, you're still going to have to deal with the drug testing and the drug testing for employment, not only for city but for private entities as well. So, but it's good to hear that in New York City they stop people from being able to test you for, you know, marijuana in relation to your probation or in relation to you obtaining employment. So that has been our news. And this damn tablet is running slow today, man. Come on, man. Do your boys man a favor and do your job, bruh. All right, but y'all know what time it is.
What in blue blazes is going on out here? Did this nigga just say blue blazes?
All right, now in blue blazes, we got a couple stories, man. Let me pull this down because that's not what I want to look at. But in blue blazes, we got a couple stories, man. And the first story is, this is a good one. Jay-Z, Sean Carter, if you will. Jay-Z is now officially the first hip-hop like person to be like a billionaire and shit. Like Jay-Z, he the one.
Yeah, oh, was that?
Oh man, I'm fucking all the way up. Never mind. We're gonna read this story here. This comes out of vibe.com. It says earlier this week 50 Cent called out his Power co-star with Timmy. What the fuck is this? This has absolutely nothing to do. Why are they showing me Rotimi news, man? Nobody cares. Okay, it says it's official. Forbes has declared Jay-Z hip-hop's first billionaire. Hov has reportedly accumulated a fortune that totals $1 billion, making him the first musician in hip-hop to do so. He is also one of only a few entertainers to achieve that feat, according to Forbes. Jay's empire was built through various deals and liquor. Armand de Bronc, don't get me on my French shit, de Bronc and Douce, cash investments, art collections, real estate, streaming services, his record label, and music catalog. Jay-Z's cash and investments come to a total of $220 million. His stake in liquor brands Douce and Armand totals $410 million. His music streaming platform Tidal tallies at $100 million. Rock Nation follows with $75 million. His music catalog rakes in $75 million. His art collection, $70 million. Finally, his real estate investments total $50 million. Some may assume that Dr. Dre already achieved billionaire status a couple years ago, but that isn't entirely true. According to Forbes, Dre sold his brand Beats by Dre to Apple for $3 billion. While his company is worth billions, Dre's personal net worth is $850 million. so check this out, right? So I saw people like kind of making the comparison, like, wait, like people were like really upset, like when this announcement was made that that Jay-Z was supposedly official, the first billionaire, right? And people were like, hold on. Dre sold Beats for $3 billion, he ain't the first. Like, come on, man. Y'all can't be changing up the narrative, man. Y'all trying to come for y'all say y'all Lord and Savior Jay-Z. And it's like, why y'all so invested, right? Like, who cares, man? Like, they both rich as shit, right? All I need to know from either one of them niggas, like, yo, can I hold like 20 mil? Like, yo, just like let me get like 20 mil. Like 20 mil to do me all right. You know what I'm saying? I've been living all my life off less than $1 million. Like, I think 20 mil would be just fine for your boy Span. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think we all could pretty much do with a cool 20 mil. Can you use 20 mil, Tanisha? Can you use 20 mil? How about you, Denise? Can you use 20 mil? I'm just saying, I can use 20 mil. Now, if Jay-Z can, like, facilitate your boy spend $20 million, or if Dr. Dre can facilitate $20 million, I'll take it. You know what I'm saying? Both of them got it. They can spare it. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, man, I saw that. But it's funny, man. It's Jay-Z's story is especially astonishing considering his journey to the top. Coming out of Brooklyn's Marcy Housing Projects, Jay hustled as a drug dealer. He later traded in the life for music, co-founding Rockefeller Records, and releasing 14 number one albums. Swizz Beatz, the super producer behind some of Jay's biggest hits, says that people can look up to Jay as the model of success. It's bigger than hip-hop. It's a blueprint for our culture. A guy that looks like us, sounds like us, loves us, made it as something that we have always felt was above us, he said. So, yeah, man, Jay-Z is officially hip-hop's first billionaire. And, yeah, some good news. For once in this world of fucking bullshit, yo, man, some good news for somebody, you know? Also, wait a second. Oh, yeah, that's what that is. So check this out, man. There was a story yesterday that kind of went viral, man. And so, it's the reason why this episode is labeled the way that it is, right? So, check this out. A dude that works at a hotel, Holiday Inn Express in particular, was confronted by a racist white, you know, customer. She called him a nigga on the job. And his cool, calm, collected demeanor not only delighted everybody on social media, especially people of color. Like, we was like, oh my God, like, this is the shit. But it enraged racists all around the world. Yo, man, he went from being like the champ of the week, like a champ of the week candidate, to like an ass hat of the week candidate in like a span of 10 hours, right? So so we're going to read this story here. This comes out of BuzzFeed.com. It says a Holiday Inn Express employee went viral after handling a customer who called him the N-word, but he was soon called out for his old anti-trans tweets. An employee of a Holiday Inn Express hotel in Austin, Texas, has become an overnight meme after he recorded himself calmly denying services to a woman he heard use a slur against him, and then he was quickly called out for his past insensitive comments about transgender people. Craig Brooks, 26, told BuzzFeed News that he overheard the woman call him a fucking nigger on the phone while trying to make a reservation. So when she came to the front desk, Brooks told the woman repeatedly that he could not have her stay at the hotel because it's above him now. As a matter of fact, I'm sure we got this video. This has been all over the place. Let me see if I can share this video with you guys here in the chat room and for the podcast, man, because, you know, y'all got to hear it too, man. There's the video. Let me pull this up. I can share this with you guys here in the chat. Just a second here. Let's share this young screen. Yes, it's above. Hashtag it's above me. All right. So let's do this. There we go. Let me pull that up for y'all. And okay, boom. So here we go, y'all. Check this out.
And that, but you called me a fucking
I need
nigger.
To stay here. My mother died.
I understand that, but you called me a fucking nigger. No,
I'm sorry.
You weren't sorry when you said it on the phone.
I was. Listen, there was no screaming.
That's going to come back to him. We're going to get back to that. You weren't sorry when you said it on the phone.
But at the end of the day, and the climate that we live in today, society,
I was sorry.
I understand that, but it's above me now.
I need a room tonight.
Well, there's the Best Western next door.
No, please, let me hear. My daughter's here.
I'm sorry, but, I mean, I was on the phone when you said it.
I said I'm sorry. Please, I've had a horrible day.
And I
today.
Had a horrible time when...
I love, like, this is amazing. Like, this is like when racist people do racist shit and they called out, like, this is the consequences. The consequences, they don't expect the consequences, right? So suddenly, oh, I've been having such a terrible day. You know, my mom just died, and I'm sorry for what I said. I'm sorry I called you a fucking nigger. Like, your being upset turned you racist, man. Like, I can be mad at a whole bunch of shit. Me being mad doesn't give me license to be racist, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is the amazing shit about it. Like, she's on the verge of tears because now the consequences hitting a smack dab in the motherfucking face. And all of a sudden, oh, I'm so sorry. My mom, your mama dying allows you to call me a nigga? Get the fuck out of here.
I'm hearing that.
He won't let me in.
It's above me. She called me a fucking nigger.
Sir, my grandma just
died. I understand that, but...
So, she called me a fucking nigger. Sir, my grandma just died. So, like, yeah, fuck the racism and shit. Fuck the shit that just happened to you. Like, fuck her being racist towards you. Go ahead and serve my mama because, you know, nobody gives a fuck about what happened to you. Like, we dealing with some other shit. Like, they don't give a fuck.
But it's above me.
Please let me.
It's above me. Sorry. The best restroom is next door.
Sir, the rest of our family
I understand is here. That, but it's above me.
Please. She said what she said. I understand. She's very...
All right. So that's the video, right? So check this out. Let me... Wait. All right. So here's the thing. He had the world at his motherfucking fingertips when this video went viral. Jemele Hill retweeted it. Gabrielle Union retweeted it. Like, I was made aware of it, like, late in the day. Like, it was probably like 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon yesterday when I first got wind of this particular story. And like immediately hold on, let me see. Who is it? Denise is in the chat room. She says, like an allergic outbreak, my racism act up on days I don't get good customer service. Yeah, man. So she's in this, like, I get wind of this story, and like somebody dug into his old tweets, found out that he was saying some real foul shit about trans people, right? And so that's pretty much what this article is talking about. It says his recorded and now famous line has gone viral since he shared it late Sunday after he got off his shift. Soon after his video went viral, he was praised for his response, including by BuzzFeed News. But internet sleuths discovered and blasted Brooks' old tweets in which he makes, countless denigrative and offensive comments about trans people. So somebody went through his tweets and they found him. And like in one tweet, he's saying, well, let me see if I could. Can you pull the picture up here? All right, it's loading kind of slow here. But in one of the tweets, he says, trans are the reason why straights think that gays want to be girls. Y'all say I'm not educated, but how can I be gay and not know about the gay community? I just don't agree with trans people. It's interesting. Like, I just don't agree with trans people in much the same way that like straight people. Like, I just don't agree with that gay shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's being transphobic while being gay. It's like you would think that somebody in that position would kind of understand. In much the same way that I talk about race in relation to the LGBTQ community. Like, you would think, like, yo, you dealt with racism, you should know how discrimination works. Y'all saying I'm transphobic. I'm not. I have nothing against trans. I just don't agree with it. How many straight people say that to gay people all the time? It says, because I really voice my opinion about how I feel about trans, I'll probably get my account suspended again. Trans Trump scene wasn't all that. The girls been doing things like that. Bro, fuck trans people. Y'all are annoying as shit. Argue with someone who gives a fuck, right? Somebody went back and they found him saying all of these things, right? And so when that happened, of course, you got people who were disappointed because it's like, damn, nigga, you ain't even get an opportunity to like take advantage of your whole little viral moment. You know what I'm saying? He could have had the whole t-shirt thing. Like, it's above me now. Like, hashtag it's above me. People using it in the chat room right now. Like, it's above me. You know, like, you could have had, like, t-shirts and shit. And, like, you could have made, you know, I don't know, got on YouTube and, like, made some videos. Maybe get a little song or some shit. Have somebody, like, read, like, what's that? Like, put the auto-tune on it or some shit like that. Do something. Could have made, you know, could have secured your bag. But you was out here saying silly shit like this, right? Now, even that could have, like, if he would have handled this correctly, if he would have handled this correctly, he could still be out here making a little change, taking advantage of his viral moment, and people would, although they would still be, there will still be a segment of the population and trans people especially who are side-eyeing the fuck out of this guy. People would have, like, he could have handled this in a way where he could have, like, kind of skated, right? And one way would have been to say, hey, man, yeah, I was on some bullshit. My bad. And much the same way we was talking about Kevin Hart a few months ago. Kevin Hart kept doubling down on his shit. So when these tweets became, you know, public knowledge to everybody, because now, I mean, before nobody was paying attention to this nigga. Now everybody's paying attention to this nigga. And because now everybody's paying attention, these tweets came to light, he started doubling down. Like, yo, y'all really went back and looked at my old tweets. And he was, you know, talking cash shit to a whole bunch of people. And then suddenly, this had to happen in like the span of 10 hours. Suddenly somebody must have gotten his ear, and that dude issued a motherfucking apology so smooth. Hold on, man. Let me see if I can pull up his apology, because I know he had it on his Twitter. He had an apology that he posted up here, and I don't see it on here. But basically, he spoke of the fact that some of the people within the community, the LGBTQ community, reached out to him, told him that what he was saying was hurtful, and that he was apologizing for it. But and here's the statement. It says, "I understand as a gay man, my comments were wrongful, and my views on an isolated group of individuals is no excuse to make a blanket statement about all trans people. The harmful tweets were about 2 years ago, and earlier this year, I went to social to attack someone else who I felt wronged me. In a moment of anger, I made my tweets, and today, instead of stopping and reading what the community has said, I got upset and retaliated. Not the correct answer, but a force of habit. I'm just a normal person who went to work yesterday to do my job. I had no idea that today I would wake up with all of this attention. Since my rude comments in the past, my trans friends and gay cousin have both spoken to me about how my words have hurt people. For that, I'm truly sorry. Just as I've said, it's above me now. My past statements are as well. All I can do is genuinely apologize and change my behavior. I'm truly sorry, with love and light." Right? So, because he had been doubling down all day, and suddenly this apology comes out, nobody believes him. Nobody believes him. It was like grand opening, grand closing on your whole list above me now shit. Totally fucked up a whole thing. Totally fucked up a whole thing by doubling down on being wrong, loud and fucking wrong. So, yeah, man, how do y'all feel about that? How do y'all feel about the fact that this guy is now like, and here's the other part too. Here's the other part too, because I saw people who were talking about, you know, the fact that here's a person who was the victim of a racist act, who is now being forced to apologize for something in the moment where he was also victimized, right? And I get that. Yeah, he was a victim in that particular instance where that white person was being racist towards him, and he dealt with it fucking swimmingly. Like, it was a sterling fucking performance. He dealt with that magnifique, like that calm under pressure, right? But he did not necessarily execute that same calm when it came to people calling him out on his own shit. And like, truth be told, like, the insincere apology is the crime, right? The insincere one. Like, people, like, if people don't really want the apology, if they're like, I don't know, like, you don't really mean that shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think you're just saying it because you know the bag is about to get fucked up, and you're trying to like get you fucked the bag up before the bag even came. Like, the bag ain't even yours no more. Like, the bag just in the wind. Like, you know, like a fucking armored truck, like riding down the fucking expressway with the doors wide open, money just all over the place, but it ain't just yours. Everybody getting a little bit of it. I think that's what he's dealing with now. I don't think anybody's really, I don't think anybody's really, you know, like taking his apology seriously. Now, that racist lady, he handled that exactly the way he was supposed to. Exactly the way he was supposed to. And that's what had everybody cheering for him. So we also get into the motivations behind whether, you know, the people who went and looked up his old tweets, right? People who went and looked up his old tweets. I'm going to tell y'all this. Although I think that's sort of kind of fucked up, at the same time, it wasn't like they had that far back to look. He was talking about the tweets being from 2 years ago. People was pulling up shit that he said 2 weeks ago. People was pulling up shit he said that day. You know what I'm saying? Like, he kind of fucked it up. He had a golden opportunity right there. People were really, like, in his corner. And he fumbled the ball, man. He fumbled the ball. He pulled the goddamn, you know, Pete Carroll in the Super Bowl. Instead of giving the ball to Marshawn Lynch, he out here trying to throw fucking touchdowns off the 1 yard line. That's what he did. So yeah. that's in Blue Blazers, y'all. Another story that's in Blue Blazers is this shit is dumb. So there's a story that comes out of Texas, and it says two dudes in Texas were trying to pull off their best Blues Brothers impression, and they died trying to jump over a drawbridge that was motherfucking open. So we're going to read this story here. Like I said, this comes out of NBCnews.com. It says two Texas men died Friday after they tried to jump their car over an open drawbridge. Authorities said Louisiana State Police responded to a single car crash shortly after 2 a.m. at the Black Bayou Bridge, about 6 miles south of Lake Charles. Investigators said the bridge was closed to traffic due to let a boat pass. A witness told police that the passenger got out of the car and pushed the gate arm up. The man then got back into the car as the driver drove toward the ramp at the end of the bridge, the police department said in a press release on its Facebook page. The driver stopped briefly, reversed, and then accelerated forward in an attempt to jump the ramp of the bridge, police said. The car landed in the water and sank to the bottom. The driver was found inside the car, and the passenger was found outside the vehicle after first managing to escape, investigators said. The men, whose identities have not been revealed, were pronounced dead at the scene. So, this was just like a...
Well, that'll be a monkey's bare-assed uncle.
This is just dumb. Like, I'll never forget that scene out of the Blues Brothers and shit when they had the police car and they, like, revved that bitch up and went over the drawbridge and everything else. But that's a movie, dog. That's a movie. I wish they had just said at least how old these guys were. You know what I'm saying? Like, I hope they were, like, at least, like, young. Because then if you young, you got an excuse for doing stupid shit like this. But if these niggas was, like, 40, like, come on, man. Come on. Or they might have been high. You know what I'm saying? That might be the thing. Like, they might have been on that, like, that PCP. They might have been on that water. You know what I'm saying? Or they might have been on that white lightning. Maybe the white lightning. Maybe they was on the crystal meth, man. Who knows? Either way, they did. And they did because they was dumb. That's it in Blue Blazers. That's in Blue Blazers. Also in Blue Blazers, man, this story here is actually kind of ironic, man. Christians out here taking L's, bro. They out here taking a whole lot of L's. This story here comes out of deadstate.org, and it says that the owners of Noah's Ark replica sued their insurance company for, guess what, y'all? Motherfucking rain damage, y'all.
Well, that'll be a monkey's bare-assed uncle.
How you suing that the Ark got rain damage? Like, of all things, rain damage? Rain damage. Come on, man. So we're going to read the story. Like I said, this comes out of deadstate.org. It says, in a bit of ironic news out of Northern Kentucky, the owners of the Noah's Ark replica that sits at the Ark Encounter exhibit are suing their insurers for rain damage, of all things. According to the Courier-Journal, Ark Encounter officials say that heavy rains over the past 2 years incurred nearly $2 million in damages to the exhibit, which insurers refused to cover. The majority of the damage was the road that leads to the structure, which was caused by a landslide. The replica was conceived by Young Earth creationist and Answers in Genesis founder Ken Ham, who spent around $101 million on the project with the help of taxpayer subsidies. Wait, what? What? I thought you were supposed to separate church and state. He says the ark was built using the exact same dimensions cited in the Old Testament. Ham and his followers see the Bible as a historical record and interpret it literally. His ministry has led him to become one of the most widely recognized proponents of the idea that the earth is only around 6,000 years old. In order to make this dogma consistent with the known natural world, he's had to extrapolate theories from astounding juvenile logic to maintain his core belief that dinosaurs actually lived alongside humans while key events in the Bible were taking place. Ham made headlines in June of 2016 when it was revealed that he forced Ark Encounter employees to sign pledges stating that they believed the Bible to be literally true and that they would not engage in premarital sex. That same year, the Courier-Journal reported that the Kentucky State Board approved $18 million in tax incentives to go towards the Ark's construction. In order to spread his message of a young earth where dinosaurs and humans coexisted in biblical times, Ham dropped the exhibit's price of admissions to 2016 in 2016, making it almost free for public schools to plan field trips to the art. If coming as a public school class, students pay only $1 each, and the supervising public school teachers come free. Ham wrote on his website, the exhibit's tour teaches kids how they're all direct descendants of Noah and shows them places such as the Ark's dinosaur wing, where Noah allegedly kept the dinosaurs. I'll be damned. Oh, that ain't even in the book. Got to be more careful. Yeah. So I'm trying to find out, like, where in the Bible did Noah have insurance on the ark? Like, was State Farm like a thing then? Like, because I mean, you know, that's Allstate. Ain't it Allstate? You're in good hands or some shit like that, and they bring the hands up, and it's almost like, was it Allstate? Was Allstate a thing? You're in good hands. Like, the hands are supposed to be God's hands, right? Can you sue God if the ark got damaged? Can you do that? This is weird, man. This is weird. Christians out here taking L's, man. Like, you know, y'all make it hard for, like, y'all make it hard for, like, people who, like, who really want to rock with y'all. Y'all make it hard, man. Y'all be on the wrong side of a whole lot of shit. That's crazy. I need to know, man. Somebody need to look that up. We need to look up the Old Testament. Tanisha's in here talking about, when you find that out, let me know. We need to find out if God's hands are the ones in the Allstate cover. You're in good. Which one is the one with the hands, man? Y'all got to let me know. Which one is the ones with the hands? You're like, yo, you're in good hands. Is it Allstate? I know it ain't State Farm. I know it ain't Progressive. I got Progressive and they ain't shit. which one is it, man? Y'all gotta let me know. I think it's Allstate. But, like, damn, man. Noah had a damn insurance policy? Like, come on, man. How does that work? It had a state. You know what? That's another time. That's another thing for another day. Denise is in the chat room, and Denise is saying, it's one of the most instructional part of the Bible, but they clearly read the clue. I'm saying that's pretty much what it was. It's in good hands. Okay, it was Allstate. Okay, it was Allstate with the good hands. That's what I'm saying. But I don't know. Was the hands really good, though, if you got the damage on the ark? You know what I'm saying? Like, it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, according to the book. And I don't know nothing about Noah suing God about the book, but about the ark having rain damage. You let me know. I'm just saying, like, how you not treating the boat? How you not treating the ark? Now, if the world was supposed to end again, what if God decided he want to have another flood, man? And he going to, like, cleanse the world of all the stupid people. You know what I'm saying? Like, cleanse the world of all the people that don't see him as, you know, the most high and everything. Like, you can't use that ark, man, because, you know, apparently it ain't motherfucking marine ready. You know? So, yeah, man, that has been Blue Blazes, y'all.
What in blue blazes is going on out here?
All right, but y'all know what time it is. All right, let's go into Proud to Be an American. And one of the first stories we got here in Proud to Be an American is actually a good story, especially considering all the bullshit that we deal with as Americans, especially Black Americans in America. There was a federal judge that rules that, we can actually secretly record the police in public spaces. All right, we're going to read this story here. This comes out of WGBH.org. It says a federal judge ordered the Boston Police Department and the Suffolk County District Attorney to notify their officers and prosecutors that people have the right to secretly record police as long as the police are on duty and in public. Chief Judge Patty B. Saris, declaratory judgment Wednesday, serves to enforce a decision from last December when she ruled it was unconstitutional for police to arrest people for secretly recording government officials. Two of the plaintiffs in that case were Renee Perez and Eric Martin, two Boston civil rights activists who secretly recorded the police on the common and at Arizona Barbecue in Roxbury. The Massachusetts ACLU's Matt Siegel represented Martin and said the case was brought on behalf of several people who were unlawfully arrested. We were finding that people were being arrested and being charged with secretly recording police officers who were performing their duties in public, Siegel said, and we believed that those arrests and those prosecutions were improper and unconstitutional. According to the December court decision since 2011, the DA's office opened at least 11 case files involving a felony charge under Section 99, a state wiretap law from 1968. During the same period, the Boston police arrested 9 people for secretly recording police officers while doing their jobs in public. Now Suffolk DA Rachel Collins and the BPD have 30 days to tell their officers and about the December ruling in a statement sent to WGBH News. Rowland said that her office will comply with the other and is discussing next steps with the Attorney General's office. The Boston police declined to comment. Of course they did, because they mad. Oh, they upset. They're like, shit, these motherfuckers keep exercising their rights and shit. Yeah, man. Boston police upset. But who cares, man? Fuck them. Nah, I shouldn't say that. But real talk, the police are finding themselves under a lot of scrutiny. And most of that scrutiny, they brought upon themselves. And they brought it upon themselves because of the fact that, yo, they're getting away with too much shit, man. And even with the video cameras that we have on our phones, man, Big Brother is us. Let there be no mistake about it. Big Brother is us. They can no longer hide behind that blue, the thin blue line, because the thin blue line is like, you know, nigga, everybody can see this. Now, the thing is whether or not they're being held accountable for what it is that they're doing, even in public. And what they used to count on was the fact that the general public did not know their rights. They count on that. And there have been plenty of times where you've seen police officers tell people who weren't even being secretive about their shit. It was like, yo, man, I'm going to document this. We're out here in public. You have no expectation of privacy out here in the public. You are a public official. Performing in an official capacity for the city or the state or the county. I got every right to videotape you. And these police officers would say, no, you don't have the right to videotape me while I'm performing my duties, which was bullshit. And it's always been bullshit. So the fact that this judgment even had to be made is ridiculous. But it goes a step further than being openly and outwardly recording the police. The fact that you can do this in secret, where you don't have to necessarily bring attention to yourself while doing this, while the police are actually doing some really fucked up shit and they not necessarily aware that you're recording them, yo, it gives you more of an opportunity to catch the police doing some bullshit. However, until there are people put in place, whether that be in the current, whether that be in the Justice Department, whether that be in the state legislatures, whether that be in the state police departments and in the city police departments, until we have people in place that will hold these officers accountable for the wrongdoings that they do while on duty, this really doesn't mean a whole lot. And that's just the nature of the beast. I remember how excited we were. Well, not necessarily excited, but I remember how we all kind of champion the fact that during the Obama administration, when they were talking about, funding for police body cams, after what happened to Trayvon Martin, or after what happened to Michael Brown, Michael Brown, after what happened to, so many of them, I'm drawing a blank, but after these stories were going viral, we were talking about having police body cams and everything. And, that's just one tool. But unless you put teeth behind that tool, it's really kind of meaningless. And so we have to put, that's one step. But until we put, some teeth behind that, it really doesn't do us a whole lot. So we got to get the teeth behind all of that. But, yeah, man, that is in Proud to Be an American. Kind of a good story. Proud to Be an American is kind of ironic, usually. But that's kind of a good story. So the other story that we got here, proud to be an American, is the fact that, and this is the other weed story that I kind of wanted to talk to y'all about. So check this out, man. Illinois is poised to enact a historic recreational marijuana bill that could clear 770,000 motherfucking convictions. We're going to read this here. This comes out of Yahoo.com. It says, Illinois poised to enact in the historic... Okay, that's like a headline. The governor of Illinois is poised to sign a bill legalizing the recreational use of marijuana there, making it the first state to do so through its legislature and the 11th overall to legalize pot. Now, see, we had to do that here in Michigan through a vote. Like, the legislature wasn't about to do that shit on their own. So shout out to Illinois, man. It says the bill, which permits marijuana possession and may clear the way for hundreds of thousands of criminal cases to be purged, was sent to Governor J.B. Pritzker's office Friday after the State House of Representatives approved it with a 66-47 vote, the first time a state legislature in the United States has taken such action. 10 previous states approved recreational use of marijuana through ballot initiatives. Pritzker, a Democrat billionaire businessman who was elected governor in November 2018, has said he plans to sign the bill, which he estimates will garner the state $170 million in the first year alone, but it remained unclear Monday when he will put his signature on the legislation. The state of Illinois just made history legalizing adult-use cannabis with the most equity-centric approach in the nation. Pritzker, who ran on a pledge to legalize cannabis, wrote on his Facebook page, "This will have a transformational impact on our state, creating opportunity in the communities that need it the most and giving so many a second chance. An equity-centric approach is designed to mitigate the effects that criminal laws have had on minorities and level the playing field for getting into the industry." The legislation, House Bill 1438, will also allow residents of Illinois convicted of possessing small amounts of marijuana to petition to have their records expunged if the offense was not associated with a violent crime. Some 770,000 Illinois residents could qualify to get their records cleared of low-level marijuana crimes, according to the Illinois Sentencing Policy Advisory Council. Goddamn. That's what's up. That's what's up. I don't even smoke weed, man. I'd be excited for y'all. Like, for real. I don't even smoke. I'd be excited for y'all, man. Listen, I know, like, Mr. Gladney, one of my English teachers from high school. Because, Mr. Gladney, I think Mr. Gladney get high. But I remember, like, I used to talk a lot about, like, the fact that people would, like, put jobs in jeopardy, like, to smoke weed. Like, it was something that I didn't understand. Like, yo, man, like, I get, like, you want to do it, but, like, if it's coming at the cost of you being able to provide for your family, I never thought that was just fucking smart to be out here doing that. I just didn't. And so when, like, he was, like, he kind of came at me when I was, like, kind of championing, like, one of my guys, man, one of the guys I went to high school with actually is, he's got a marijuana farm in Colorado. And I was telling my boy, like, yo, I'm kind of proud of him, you know, out here doing what he's doing or whatever. And Mr. Gladney was like, wait a minute, what? You know? And I was basically just like, yo, man, it's always been like, yo, if it's illegal for you to do it, I've never understood the risk, right? I never understood the risk. I get that, like, as far as the drug itself, you know, the attitudes around its effectiveness for, you know, medical purposes and stuff like that. And I know a lot of people I grew up around a whole bunch of motherfuckers that just smoke weed because they like to smoke weed. They wasn't treating shit. You know what I'm saying? And I didn't judge them for it. I probably did. But but the point that I was making was like, yo, if you smoking weed and then you got to figure out how you going to, like, pass this drug test, like, you know, maybe lay off the weed a little bit. You know what I'm saying? That was my thinking. I was just trying to be on some logical shit. But because all of these states are now decriminalizing the weed in the ways in which they are, yo, I get why. I'm like, okay, cool, do your thing, you know what I'm saying? But yo, like, it being legal in Illinois and in Michigan, both states that I frequent, yo, man, I'm just happy for y'all. Like, if more than anything else, I'm just happy for y'all. I don't even partake. I'm just happy for y'all, man. But that's in the news, man. Denise is in the chat room. She's like, yo, me too. I don't smoke, but I think it should be treated like, I don't think it should be treated like criminals. Legalize it. I'm Jamaican. There you go. So, yeah, man, if they can get those people, like, that shit removed off their record, that's beautiful. I think it's kind of bullshit that they got a petition to get that shit removed off their record. But, you know, processes, right? Processes. That's how they go, man. I wish I can get, well, I probably could. I just ain't really been about the business of going about doing that. That arrest record that I got in Illinois, getting that shit expunged or getting that shit taken off, because that was some bullshit too. The judge threw that shit right on out. But yeah, that's in Proud to Be an American, man. Good news, ironically, in Proud to Be an American, man. This is special, man. That's how you can tell a nigga been gone for a while. You know what I'm saying? Because there ain't never good news in the Proud to Be an American. It ain't never no good news in Proud to Be an American. But goddamn it, it ain't all good news. Right? It ain't all good news. So, one of the stories that's in Proud to Be an American ain't a good story. This one here is United States added to the list of the most dangerous countries for journalists for the first time. So, we're going to read this story here. This comes out of NBCNews.com. It says at least 63 professional journalists were killed during their jobs in 2018. A 15% increase over last year, Reporters Without Borders said. It said the murder of the Saudi columnist Jamal Khashoggi in a year when more than half of all journalists who were killed around the world were targeted deliberately reflects a hatred of the media in many areas of society, a free press of advocacy group said Tuesday. At least 63 professional journalists were killed during their jobs in 2018, a 15% increase over last year, said the group. Reporters Without Borders. The numbers of deaths rises to 80 when all media workers and people classified as citizen journalists are included, it said in its annual report. The world's five deadliest countries for journalists include three, India, Mexico, and for the first time, the United States, where journalists were killed in cold blood even though those countries weren't at war or in conflict, the group said. The hatred of journalists that is voiced by unscrupulous politicians, religious leaders, and businessmen has tragic consequences around the world and has been reflected in this disturbing increase in violations against journalists, Secretary General Christophe Delors said in a statement. Khashoggi, a royal insider who became a critic of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and began writing for the Washington Post after moving to the United States last year, was killed inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Turkey in October. His death sparked worldwide outrage. Saudi officials have rejected accusations that the Crown Prince ordered his death. Reporters Without Borders said the three most dangerous countries for journalists to work in were Afghanistan, Syria, and Mexico. Meanwhile, the shooting deaths of five employees of the Capital Gazette newspaper in Annapolis, Maryland in June propelled the United States into the ranks of the most dangerous countries for the first time. That's a motherfucking shame, man. That's a motherfucking shame. You know, like, for all the shit that people talk about, you know, America being number one. We're the greatest country in the world. Are we? Are we with shit like this going on? Are we? You know, like, I try very hard. I've been trying very hard lately not to talk about Donald Trump. It's been a very concerted effort. I've been really trying not to talk about Donald Trump a lot here on the show. Because at a certain point, I felt like Donald Trump was dominating this show with all of the stories that we had to talk about with him. But, yo, I think the ways in which Donald Trump has been able to kind of usurp, political and societal norms of who the president is and how the president is supposed to, you know, comport himself and the attitude that he takes on when it comes to journalists and the embracing that he does of the type of people that he does around the world when it comes to dictators, when it comes to strongmen, when it comes to tyrants and what have you. Like, yo, it just kind of like leaves it open for interpretation. And like, yo, we might be able to kill these motherfuckers. You know what I'm saying? We might be able to just kind of do what we want. Like, they ain't really got no rights out here. You know what I'm saying? It's funny. Like, and I remember somebody asked me, and this was recently, someone asked me, like, yo, Span, like, you know, since you don't necessarily live in Detroit anymore, like, do you ever think about, getting rid of your guns? And my wife even said something to me because I don't necessarily carry my guns on me as often. I don't carry my gun as often as I used to when I used to live in the city, right? And my wife noticed that I don't carry as often as I used to. I don't necessarily think about getting rid of my shit, considering all the things that are going on in America right now. Like, not at all. Like, not at fucking all. Like, I live in a white suburb, and I know I live amongst Trump supporters and shit, and I know they got it. You know what I'm saying? I know they got some shit. I ain't getting rid of mine. That's crazy as hell. No, absolutely not. And if journalists are being killed for simply telling the truth, and if people will feel emboldened, if they don't like what it is that I'm saying here on this mic and decide they want to try to find out where I live again, to post my address and stuff on social media, like, yeah, I'm not trying to have nothing happen to me, and I'm not trying to have anything happen to my family. I don't know how I just turned this into like me carrying guns and shit, but but no, man, this is crazy in the fact that, like, yo, journalists are being targeted in the United States in an unprecedented way, and I believe that Donald Trump has a lot to do with why America is now on that list for the first time ever since they've been keeping track of shit like that. But yo, that has been Proud to Be an American. That I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the U.S. All right, so we're coming up on like the end of the show and shit, but of course, before we get out of here, y'all know what we got to do.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
Yes, indeed, we got some hats now, motherfuckers. And the first person in a long while to be called an ass at here on the Spirit Report podcast, man, is this dude, none other than, let me stop saying no other than, because y'all don't know this motherfucker here, man. He's like some random, he like some rando, you know what I'm saying? But some dude named Samuel Goria. Samuel Goria is the ass head of the week this week here at the Spirit Report Podcast. And the reason why Samuel Goria is ass head of the week here at the Spirit Report Podcast this week is the fact that this motherfucker walked his ass up into a Target. And Target, it's Pride Month, y'all. The LGBTQ community is celebrating their pride and who they are, celebrating the advantages that they have, not advantages, but the advances that they have been able to make in society to be recognized. And a lot of legislatures are actually starting to pull up legislation to protect them, rightfully so. It's Pride Month. Target is celebrating Pride Month. This dude goes into a Target, sees that they have kids' clothes with the rainbow colors on them, and he's upset because they're celebrating Pride and they're allowing kids. They have kids' clothes that are celebrating Pride. So I'm going to play this video. As a matter of fact, for those of you guys in the chat room, let me pull this up so you guys can watch it right along with your boy, because this is some stupid shit. And I need y'all to see this just as well as I'm watching this, because I can't be watching this shit by myself. Okay? I can't be watching this by myself. But let me go ahead and play this video. Let me pull this up. As a matter of fact, let me go ahead and expand that.
So I'm in Target, and they have children's clothes to support LGBT. I love Target, but this is just crazy. The fact that they would have this out here to support the LGBT community, letting your children wear that, that's insane.
All right. So he said, that's insane that they allow these children to wear these clothes. And there was nothing really wrong with the clothes other than the fact that it said Pride, other than the fact that it had rainbow colors on it. It wasn't like it was some outlandish, crazy ass shit on these clothes. Newsflash, bruh. It's gay kids, man. Like, yo, it's kids out here who are of the LGBTQIA spectrum and who are dealing with being bullied in school because the other kids don't understand, who are also being bullied by adults like your stupid ass because you don't understand. They are dealing with a world that doesn't accept them for being exactly who they are, being who they feel to be. It's crazy. I think it's crazy that you feel it's crazy that these kids should not be able to express who they feel they are. Right? That you feel like it's an abomination or that it's an outrage that these kids will be able to wear clothes that expresses and makes them feel proud to be who they are as people. Fuck you, man. Fuck you. And I know a lot of people tie their rejection of the LGBTQ community. A lot of people tie their shit into their religion. Guess what, man? Everybody ain't religious like you. Everybody, even the people that share the same religion as you, don't necessarily feel the same way that you do about said religion and about said sexual orientation. Or whether or not, if you're Christian, or whether or not the Bible even, or whether or not Jesus even talks about the LGBTQ community at all. Or whether or not you are upholding the laws of the Bible, of which you should be too. It's a whole lot of hypocrisy when it comes to the church, man. That's why I'm saying, Christians being out here taking a whole lot of L's, man. Y'all making it real hard to be Christian out here. Y'all making it real hard to be Christian out here, man. Y'all out here doing some, y'all doing the most. Y'all are doing the motherfucking most, man. So yeah, man. What's this dude's name again? Let me see. What's this guy's name again? Because Facebook done totally said fuck his video and move me on to some other shit. Samuel Goria. Yo ass is the ass hat of the week this week here at the Spirit of Poor podcast. And my tablet just died. So yo, we got some hats now, motherfucker. This bitch just died on me. I can't do no more sound effects, right? So it's on to our it's on to our champ of the week, man. And our champ of the week this week here at the Spirit of Poor podcast is Governor Gretchen Whitmer here in Michigan, man. And the reason why Gretchen Whitmer I think is the champ of the week this week is because I thought I had this story in here. I'll be damned. I do not. Let me see if I can pull this up on my own personal Facebook. Let's see here. Do I have it? I don't. Dig that. So the reason why Gretchen Whitmer, though, is the champ of the week this week is because Gretchen Whitmer is actually one of the people who helped to kind of spearhead a new legislation here in Michigan during Pride Month to introduce protections for the LGBTQ community, to keep them from being evicted for being gay, to keep them from being fired from a job for being of the LGBTQ community. There's still places within Michigan that can let you go for being gay, who can let you go or who can evict you from your home for being in the LGBTQ community. And she helped to spearhead new legislation, which I'm sure will pass and it will be signed into law here in Michigan to keep these sorts of discriminations from happening. Also on some selfish shit, she also signed legislation into law just last week that's going to bring down these insurance rates on my cars and shit. You know what I'm saying? These insurance rates, we got the highest insurance rates in Michigan. I pay $500 a month in car insurance. I need that to come down, B. And Gretchen trying to get that shit to come down. And I appreciate that. I can appreciate that a whole hell of a lot. So on some selfish shit, also on the LGBTQ stuff. But on some selfish shit with the car insurance, oh yeah, nigga, Gretchen Whitmer got me. I'm glad I voted for her. You know what I'm saying? I need that money back in my pocket, Gretchen. Now, if you can fix the damn roads like you said you was going to fix the damn roads, second term, all day long. Real talk. But yeah, man, it is time for me to get on up out of here. I've been talking for a little while now, man. It's like an hour and a half on a nice show. I've been gone for a minute. But yes. We're going to get on up out of here. But of course, before we do, I got to remind you guys how to get in touch with me here at the Spirit Report podcast and let your voice be heard. Go ahead and hit up that hotline. Area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages. Of course, we will play them on the show and respond in kind. And if you're watching the show live, you can hit up that hotline and you can chop it up with us here at the Spirit Report podcast. And chop it up with us while we're doing the show. So do that. Area code 313-288-0485. You can also hit us up on the email here at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave us those emails. Of course, those emails will get read here live on the show. And we will reply to those emails live here on the show, man. Also, follow your boy here on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. So go ahead and follow your boy throughout the week, man. Chop it up with me. You know what I'm saying? We talk a little bit of something. on those Twitter and Instagram streets, man. Real talk. Also, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and or Stitcher Radio. Those 5-star reviews are the ones that get read here live on the show. So we appreciate everybody who leaves those 5-star reviews. It's one way to put down for the show. Doesn't cost you a dime. Just a couple minutes of your time to let everybody know why you're messing with us over here at the Spin Report Podcast and letting your voice be heard. Excuse me. Letting your voice be heard. You can also go to www.thespanreport.com. You can go there. You can watch replays of the show. You can vote in the polls. You can leave comments there. Also, I'm going to have the Patreon account set up over there so that you guys can kind of help me keep this thing rolling, man. Like I'm only looking for $1, man. 50 listeners, $1 each, and we can do these live shows somewhere other than Facebook where they can't really censor your board. You know what I'm saying? $50. If we get 50 listeners with a $1 donation, we can keep this thing rolling. If we get 200 listeners with a $1 donation, we can keep this thing rolling. And I know that I see the downloads, man. I see the downloads. I got more than like 200 listeners. I got more than 500 listeners. Dig this. I got more than 1,000 listeners regularly. If 50 of y'all can hook your boy up with a $1, we in there like Flynn, man. We in like Flynn. So, yo, real talk. We really do appreciate everybody who can really step up in that way and help us move this show off of fucking Facebook and back to something more palatable to not only the Span Report, but to y'all as well, man, because we can't be getting shut down because Facebook on some bullshit while we reporting racism and whatnot, right? So, yes, sir, man. Yeah, donate to the show. We really do need that money, right? But, yeah, man, I'm going to get on up out of here. I got to go. But I will talk to you guys again soon. But until next time, fam, peace.